And so that intense period of anxiety and that intense period of worry was mitigated just by literally sitting. And I think that's the hardest for a lot of us in cities. A lot of us who have very, very demanding careers, we don't know how to sit and we don't know how to listen. And I was forced to do that because I was so anxious. So I'm actually kind of grateful for that time of misery, which is because it just showed me how to be grateful for what I do have.
Hello, and welcome to the Faith and Work LA podcast, a narrative effort from the Center for Faith and Work Los Angeles that lifts up stories of everyday Christians impacting Los Angeles through their daily work. My name is Gage Arnold, and I'll be your host. In this episode, we hear from Annie Choi. Annie is the founder and owner of Found Coffee in Eagle Rock, Los Angeles. And Annie is passionate about creating safe spaces. See, it was after a mid-career pivot from the entertainment industry where she was working with Keeping Up with the Kardashians and Project Runway, to name just a few, that she found herself seeking to create something, specifically a place where people could feel free to be themselves and push back against the loneliness of Los Angeles. Thus, Found Coffee was born. Nestled in the Eagle Rock neighborhood between Pasadena and Glendale, Found is a gathering place that serves the community with exceptional customer service, delicious goods, and a sense of comfort. In this episode of the Faith and Work LA podcast, Annie shares about her career pivot, what following Jesus looks like in her life, how she's navigating life as an entrepreneur, and how a theology of space can change a community. We're honored to have Annie joining us, and we hope you enjoy the conversation. Annie, it's so good to have you on the first CFW LA podcast. How are you doing today?
I'm so, so good. How are you? As you take a sip.
I'm well. I'm really excited to get to hear a bit more of your story. As I mentioned in the intro, you have been well involved with the Center for Faith and Work Los Angeles. You participated in the Framework Fellows program. And just kind of as we get started with this conversation, I would love to just hear a bit more about what it looked like for you in your faith journey. Sort of how did you begin following the Lord? What has faith looked like, sort of played out in the seasons of your life? And I know that's a big question, but yeah, just sort of take me through maybe an abridged version of what faith has looked like in your life.
Yeah, sure. So I grew up in the church. I grew up in the Korean American church in Los Angeles. I was born and raised here. And it's very interesting. I'm actually the only family member in my immediate family that still attends church, even though we grew up in church. And so my parents left the church, and so did my older sister, probably like 10, 15 years ago. And I can understand why a lot of people burn out in the Christian culture here. I think there's just, it's so busy. It's so, just there's a lot going on. And so for their own reasons, my family members have left, but I actually was brought back to the church towards the end of high school by a dear friend. And so I wasn't introduced to the Reformed Presbyterian Church of America, PCA, until college. And so I attended a really wonderful church in San Diego called Redeemer. Now they're called Redeemer. Back then when I was attending church down there, it was called Harbor Presbyterian Church. And so I was involved with Harbor. And then when I graduated from UC San Diego, I came back to LA and then I attended Pacific Crossroads, which is where I was heavily involved for the past decade or so. And that's where I found out about the fellowship program with CFW LA. And I was part of the first cohort for CFW LA 2 years ago now. So faith is such a big part of my story. It kind of takes a step back in certain seasons of my life just because of how things happen. But I'm very thankful for where God has brought me towards just integrating faith into my own career and story. And so yeah.
Yeah, thanks. That's really, really helpful. And I'm curious, what was it, what was so inviting maybe about the church, and what was it that sort of drew you into it while your family may have been sort of drawn away? What specifically was it that kind of, Christ used to call you sort of to it?
Yeah, I'm very thankful that I was introduced to the concept of grace when I went to college. When I was growing up as a Christian, in like youth ministry and all of that, I don't think I understood nor was introduced to this big concept of grace and how it really saturates my life. And I didn't understand it until I actually got to Harbor, and it became a huge factor in how I was involving myself at church, and then I was also involved in a campus ministry when I was in college. But that factor of grace and that characteristic of God, just that character of God, just enveloped me when I was in a very pivotal, transitional, formative season of my life in college. Felt like a lot of my identity was shaped in college. And so as many people, you know, have their stories shaped in college too. But it was this grace thing that I'm still actually grasping on the daily. And I learn more about, and it's my view of grace has actually expanded as I've grown as a Christian, which is pretty cool.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. There's a really cool, diagram that someone drew for me, and it almost looks like a sort of a V, or I guess a greater than sign, and it sort of shows the trajectory of the Christian life in a sort of a very short version. But on one hinge of the sort of line that's going up, it says sort of is grace. So you're sort of growing in your awareness of grace. But inversely, you're also growing in your awareness of your own sin and your own just proclivities, your own brokenness. And at the center of it is the cross of Christ, which bridges this. And so as much as there is, you sort of need the Good Friday and the Easter Sunday of Christianity to both hold in tension. And so you grow in your awareness of, wow, I'm a lot worse off than I thought I was. But also in regards, you're also growing in grace of understanding, wow, but I'm so much more loved than I ever even dreamed imagining, which is a really, I think, a helpful.
Picture. I'm a very visual person. And yeah. So I'm going to think about that now.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's true. Like it could be very discouraging knowing that you are so incredibly broken. But what I've been so encouraged by in my own faith journey is that I know that I'm known and seen and loved and embraced despite my brokenness. And that is where, you know, it keeps me going forward.
Yeah. Well, let's put a pin in that, because I want to come back to that and how that maybe informs how you're living and working, and what is, how does that affect how you publicly live? But before that, I would love to know, you mentioned after college, you made your way to Los Angeles. What did that transition look like? What brought you to LA? What was maybe inviting to you about the city?
Like I mentioned before, I was born and raised in LA, and I didn't know what my career was going to be. I majored in communication and international studies in college, and I didn't take a video editing class until my last year. And so I thought, oh, great, I'm going to be in the entertainment industry. My parents are still in LA, and I've loved LA all my life. I know a lot of people hate on LA because it's a very hard city. It's a very lonely city. And I actually was privy to that loneliness when I came back. Had I not had my high school friends and had I not had a community already, I could see how lonely people could be. However, what's so great about the city too is that there's so many resources and there's so much diversity and there's so much culture. And so my jumping point into my career was the television post-production industry. And so I worked in that for a few years. I was working on some pretty well-known shows. So I worked on Keeping Up with the Kardashians. And then I also worked on Project Runway All-Stars. And so I worked on these well-known shows, but what brought me back to LA is actually not what kept me here, because I did a career change in my mid-20s. And that involved a lot of anxiety and it involved a lot of transition as well. But that's what helped me start Found Coffee. And so what brought me to LA was entertainment, but what's kept me here is coffee, which is really interesting. And so,
yeah, I can imagine. I want to know more about this transition time because it sounds like there was a lot that was there. It sounds like this was a pretty dramatic shift in maybe the plan that you thought you had for your life versus the plan that was actually taking place. So maybe take me into what that transition period looked like. What you mentioned sort of it being an anxious time and anxiety really manifesting. What was sort of the driver behind that? And help me go deeper there.
So I thought that my dream job was going to be an editor at Pixar. And I applied to Pixar 4 times and I got rejected 4 times. And what ended up happening was the post-production industry and the skills that were involved in video editing weren't very congruent to who I was. And so I thought God was calling me to be a storyteller. And where else to be a storyteller but in television and movies? But the actual skill set itself did not match who I was. And what ended up happening was I felt extremely isolated. Like I was saying, like in LA, it's really hard, but the job itself, I was in front of a computer, you know, 10, 12, 14 hours a day on headphones, you know, not really interacting with people. And what I am, what God has shown me is that I'm a people person. And so I was kind of stewing in this anxiety of like, I thought that my identity was my career, and it was this push-pull tugging of, God, I thought that this was where you wanted me to be. I thought that you wanted me to influence this culture of, you know, there's a lot of materialism in Hollywood, and I wanted to be that, you know, small Christian girl who was like changing the world behind the scenes, literally. And what ended up happening was I was so miserable. I was extremely anxious in the decision to even leave. Because at that point, by the time I was in kind of a pivot moment in my career, I had been working up to that point for 7 years. And so that was 7 years of hard work, of unpaid internships, all this stuff. And I was like, God, where are you leading me? Because I literally had no idea about what was next. And that trust that God wanted me to take and taking that risk of leaving a career that I thought he wanted me to be in was really tough. I was incredibly scared. And the anxiety that enveloped me was not fun. It was a lot of you know, emotions, a lot of feels, as the kids say. That transition period, I actually took about a year off from working in general. I ended up taking actually my first missions trip in that gap year that I was off of work. And I kind of explored. And I think that's where God wanted me to be. He wanted me just to sit in his providence, because really he provided so much during that time when I felt like I didn't have a direction. It was pretty incredible. And I think that's what God has taught me in the past, I guess, like decade. And I feel like the past decade has been this transition period. And it's, he has literally and physically slowed me down to be like, look, Annie, you're good. I've got this. I'm holding your hand. Like, you don't need to worry so much. And so that intense period of anxiety and that intense period of worry was mitigated just by literally sitting. And I think that's the hardest for a lot of us in cities, a lot of us who have very, very demanding careers. We don't know how to sit and we don't know how to listen. And I was forced to do that because I was so anxious. So I'm actually kind of grateful for that time of misery, which is because it just showed me how to be grateful for what I do have. You know, it's pretty crazy. It's pretty awesome.
Absolutely. I'm just touched by the amount of courage that it probably took to endure such a huge pivotal change and such a difficult season of just sort of being in the ringer. I describe it as like the meat grinder of life, where it just feels like you're just being smushed.
Yes.
And it's just really hard. There are definitely certain times where it seems like their life can lead you to a mountaintop experience, or maybe you're just coasting lightly downhill, and sometimes you're in the valley. But oftentimes when you're in the valley, those are the times that you end up looking back on as the time of deepest growth, as the time where you actually were dependent on this faith that is so integral to your worldview, to your life, to your hope. And so it's not necessarily, nobody wants to will themselves into hard situations, but oftentimes having gone through them, it seems like they yield the biggest like growth return for us. If we're willing to endure them.
I've actually talked about this quite often with a few friends, but I feel like individuals actually have to go through an implosion of sorts. And God helps us to rise above, literally from the ashes. I find that organizations who are going through a lot of turmoil too, and a lot of, toxicity and stuff. I feel like those organizations also have to go through implosion of sorts. And that's when you're looking back in retrospect, you feel like those dark, low valleys are the ones where personally speaking, I found that I can see the light, but it's so dim, but it's there. And I don't know what it is except faith, honestly. Yeah.
Yeah. I think we all have to reach that point where we have to put feet to our faith. You know, we actually have to trust and depend on this thing that we believe and we trust in. And that can be really scary. It can be really hard, and especially living in the West, where it seems like we can certainly pad our lives with a lot of comfort, and to not feel the pressure or the weight of that need all the time. It's in those moments where it actually comes to bear that, yeah, you're right. We can see the light, and it's a bit dim sometimes, but we're having to trust and do the next right thing and put one foot in front of the other.
Exactly.
So, okay, that's incredible. Thanks for sharing that. And I think many people who will listen will probably have similar experiences themselves. And so you're going through this sort of deeply difficult transformational season that leads to Found. What's the story behind Found Coffee? / what is Found Coffee?
So Found Coffee, I've had it for 5 years now. It's been open for 4.5, but I literally just passed my 5-year mark as a business owner. And so I'm really, really proud. Yay. I didn't know that I wanted to open up a coffee shop until I worked in coffee, honestly. It was my hobby to go coffee shop hopping and to really sit in the ambiance of coffee shops and enjoy, you know, yummy drinks. I didn't know how to open a coffee shop until I actually worked in one. And so when I was in that gap year, I applied to so many barista jobs. And because I had had a career prior, no one hired me. So I had this difficulty of, okay, what am I going to do next? And so I applied to one of my favorite coffee shops, which is Demi Tasse Coffee Roasters. It's a small chain in LA. And my dear friend, Bobby Roshan, now he's my friend for life, he said I could work for free. And so I literally applied for a free internship, unpaid internship. And I started the company as an unpaid intern, and then in 4 months became a general manager. So I learned the coffee industry from the ground up. I didn't have any training as a manager. I learned on the job. And so that's what actually helped me in my training to open Found Coffee 1.5 years later. And Found Coffee is located in the Eagle Rock neighborhood of Los Angeles. It's right sandwiched in between Pasadena and Glendale. And I like to say that Found Coffee is the neighborhood coffee shop. And I know a lot of coffee shops will claim that, but we are literally Eagle Rock's only specialty coffee shop. And so we see the same people every single day. And I like to say that we're pretty unique because about, I want to say like 85-90% of my sales comes from regulars. So we see the same people on the daily. We know their kids, we know their dogs, and we're really thankful. And Found Coffee, I've named it Found because I want community to be found there. We have two large communal tables there, and I love, love, love when people who don't know each other actually meet each other at my shop, and then they make a connection, and it's beautiful. Because what I said earlier is that LA is so lonely, and now I've created this corner coffee shop where people can meet one another organically, and it's not forced, and it's really wonderful. And so, and also obviously, Found Coffee has Christian overtones in the name. If you're very savvy, you would kind of know.
if you look closely.
I actually have people who are Christians, and they're like, Are you Christian? I'm like, yes, I am. But I'm really thankful for Found. It's my first small business. It's thriving. I'm really thankful. So, yeah.
Yeah, that's incredible. And it seems like there's a consistent theme of like hospitality and sort of kindness that you would like to sort of exude that seems woven throughout every aspect of Found. So, In what ways could you just give me like a theology of hospitality? Maybe like what drew you into like the hospitality industry? What's kept you in it? Like what do you see kind of at its best? What does a good cup of coffee and a good neighborhood coffee shop do for not just people, but like communities and cities, et cetera?
For sure. I have always stressed to my staff to get every single person's name when you order. And so Gage, for you, if you ordered a latte, we actually kind of know our regulars by their drinks too. So you'd be like Latte Gage, right? But for the practicality of it, we don't want someone to take someone else's drink. But below that all, my philosophy is that everyone wants to be known by name. and God calls us by name. And so it's really important that everyone in my shop is known by name. And I have stayed, hospitality is hard, let's be real, you know, like to deal with, oh my gosh, probably like thousands of customers a week. It's not fun, especially when they're cranky and they haven't had caffeine in their system. However, I'm really thankful because what's really great about coffee and the coffee industry is that people have the shared love, right? And so they come together, they gather together over a warm beverage, sometimes cold, you know, and they are open to conversation. And what I like to say that is that when I entered the coffee industry 7 years ago, I actually made my lifelong friends within the first month. And these were actually regulars that were at Demitas. These were co-workers. And I think people have this shared camaraderie in hospitality because they know how to be in the people business, you know? And what's kept me in this industry is that it's a people business. And I'm so thankful because we are, you know, again, first name basis with a lot of our regulars. And that is what fuels me because it shows me that it's just an everyday thing. And I know that sounds really normal. Like, I know I'm not curing cancer by serving you a really wonderful latte. I also, as a business owner, don't claim that I make the best lattes in the world. However, I make a pretty good one. But at the end of the day, I think it's the connections that are made in a coffee shop that are very important. And so it's the community, it's gathering over the communal table, literally, and providing that space of warmth and hospitality that, you know, honestly, I don't know if the local church does very well anymore. And so I wonder if this corner coffee shop that doesn't have, you know, a purely faith-based mission in my business, you know, mission statement, I wonder if people, and I hope that people feel welcomed in my space and feel that, you know, that feeling that they can stay and they're not judged. Yeah.
It sounds like you're describing a safe space is that you hope people feel when they come into your coffee shop, which.
Yeah. If we can hold space for someone who feels isolated, you know, yeah. And it's interesting. If you look at the layout of the shop too, I have like single two tops on one end of the shop. And that's, I call it laptop city because usually people will have their laptops, you know, one by one. And that's okay because that's what a coffee shop's there for, you know? But the other side, the other half, two thirds of the space is just communal. It's like, you got to share your space, bro, you know? Mm-hmm. And that's okay. Like meet someone. It's okay to meet someone. And I'm so happy that that is what has been fostered at the shop.
Yeah, that's beautiful. And even as you were sharing a little bit of that, it called something to mind for me, which is something that you probably experienced in Framework Fellows, which was that all work, all good work matters to God and his redemptive plan for the world. And so that's part of what our mission is. And it seems like you're living into that mission in the square corner that God has called you to steward. And so for all of us, we may, not just those of us who are in the helping professions or those who are pastors or ministers, but everyone is contributing to create flourishing, which is what God is about, which is what the Bible is about, is promoting human flourishing. And that's in your neighborhood, to the people that come inside your shop, you're helping to do that. You're helping them flourish as people, as image bearers of God, which is beautiful, right? Good, noble work that you're doing. And so, and as an offshoot to that, one of the things that we would talk about in through some of the work that CFW LA does, and really some of the past work that I did at a similar institute in Nashville, was how our work shines light on darkness. And in that, it's sort of recognizing that sin has affected structures and systems in the world. So the hospitality industry does not work as it was intended to. It has thistles and thorns. But the way that we as Christians operate in the world is that we shine light into those dark areas. So we model what flourishing, what shalom, what peace looks like through our work, as a way to show people sort of what the gospel looks like in action, what God's character looks like played out in the world. And so with that being said, I would love if you could sort of unpack maybe what are some dark areas, and you kind of hinted at this, about like the hospitality industry and some just owning a small business, and but as well, what are ways that you're, and you, again, you kind of touched on this too, maybe just spelling it out a little more, what are ways that you're shining light on maybe some of those dark areas that you see in the industry?
Yeah, I like to say that I work in service and I'm not your servant. And, you know, I'm incredibly protective of my staff. And so thankfully we have a very good customer base where they're not entitled. They're very kind and very sweet. But you do, of course, have, you know, the crankies, the one-offs that come in, and they're very demanding and they're extremely rude. And I do tell my staff to first assume that this person is just having a bad day. This is not who they are inherently. And I think that assumption, first off, you know, kind of dissolves the tension, right? Because I feel like in this very hostile, very volatile environment that is the United States now, it's easy to jump down someone else's throat for a trigger or something, right? Rudeness. But I do try to encourage my staff, and they are such kind staff. I'm so thankful for the people that I've hired. And I'm very proud of the people I've hired, because they know how to navigate these murky waters of rudeness and entitlement too, you know? So I try to encourage them. That's their first reaction, you know, their first response. And then if they continue, this customer, if they come back and they're continuously rude to my staff, then because I am very protective, I will step in and I will say something, you know. I think it's very, you know, it's hospitality, so it's easy to poo-poo on the worker behind the bar. And I don't think that's very fair. It's not an easy job, just because it's minimum wage, you know? And so I feel, because I have been in my employee shoes, myself as a barista, I'm incredibly mama bear when it comes to these types of interactions, but I also try to extend grace. So that's my first response, right? So I try to shine light first, and then if they continue, then you obviously realize that it's a character problem, you know, and then you try to navigate the waters in a different way. There's that, as well as, you know, like things like stupid things, like I've gotten broken into 3 times in 2 years. And that, you see, as a small business owner, is really discouraging if you let it get to you. Like the first time we got actually things stolen from the shop, the second and third time it was just a big nuisance. And I could have been, you know, mopey and just like, woe is me, why is this happening to me? But what I realized too is God is so good, because he rallies the community around us. And it's, I think, because our staff and myself, we've invested so much into this community. When we got broken into, they were incredibly supportive. I had one regular who, you know, donated money towards our our deductible, our insurance deductible. We had another church actually down the street where a lot of pastors and a lot of the congregants come to my shop. They had a good neighbor's budget in their staff budget or their yearly budget, and they paid for the replacement of my door. And these are the moments of light that just come when you have the daily craziness of owning a shop and running a shop. These are the moments of encouragement that I lean into. It's always the community. It's always the people that God has placed in the community that remind me of the grace and the mercies, daily mercies.
Yeah, that's beautiful and hard, and just an entryway into the reality that work is hard, and there are effects of sin and brokenness that we all experience and feel in our daily work that are sort of out of our control and out of our hands. And but what's so encouraging about that is that what you've created through the work of your own hands is a business and an organization that doesn't just operate for its own end. It doesn't just operate for the bottom line. It operates with people mattering and people being image bearers of God, being at, kind of at the center of what you're doing. And even if that's not explicitly put forward in the form of a Jesus fish and on your front window or anything like that, I think people still kind of get the fragrance of the gospel, it sounds like.
Yeah.
When they come in, they know that there's something different about this place, and they feel safe and they want to experience more of it.
Yeah. I'm so incredibly grateful that people want to stay. I think that's one of the coolest things, is that people come and they see that our staff is kind. And you have to hire people like that, right? You can't teach kindness. And so God's been very good in providing the right staff for me, as well as the discernment to hire these types of staff members. But also, what a huge compliment, right? That people would want to come back and that they would feel the warmth of what Found provides, not just from the drinks, but from the community that kind of buzzes in within the walls of my shop. And so that's super rad. And it's tangible to see, which I think it's hard to see sometimes God's goodness in tangible ways at times. And these reminders motivate me and fuel me to continue forward.
Welcome back. We hope you enjoyed our conversation with Annie, and we hope you'll stick around with us for our upcoming reflections on faith and work. If you haven't already, please do subscribe, download, and rate this podcast, and spread the word to others on social media. It really, really, really does make a difference and helps us out a ton as we try to spread the word. This podcast, again, is a production of the Center for Faith and Work Los Angeles, a gospel-centered nonprofit that's dedicated to helping Angelenos reimagine their vocations to reshape culture in Los Angeles and beyond. If you'd like to take the conversation further, feel free to visit our website, faithandworkla.com, to find resources, videos, and blogs designed to help you reimagine your own work with the gospel in mind. Thanks for joining us. We'll see you next time.